So you've had a chance, I think, to read. I thought maybe you'd want to kind of get the background of this, so I won't go over any of that. I'll just make a quick comment about it. And it's been said that an age reveals its values and its choice of heroes, and I hope Indiana never loses the capacity to appreciate greatness when we see it, and to celebrate the very best among us. And that's why I thought it might be a good idea to revive the Sachem Award, and to do so in a way that expresses the viewpoint that true greatness is two-dimensional, that achievement alone is not enough, that the way a person lives his or her life is as important as the things they may achieve in that life. And also to focus on the greatest among us, no great inflation here, one a year. And I hope we've chosen in a way Hoosiers will applaud in selecting Coach Wooden and then Father Hesburgh as the inaugural recipients. But any review of the lives of these two people, I think, reflects the values I hope to recognize here. They have achieved much, but they have also lived lives of virtue and selflessness and principle in a way that we all will fail to attain in our own lives, but ought to try to appreciate and imitate if we can.
You said one, but you put two.
2005 for John Wooden, and 2006. We will honor Father Hesburgh here next week.
The selection is made by you alone. Will you encourage nominations?
Yes, sure. And I'm sure future governors will want to do that. They may want to have a different approach. But I sounded out a lot of people and obviously tested these ideas after they came to me on a lot of people.
What happens to the Sagamore?
Sagamore remains, and we've been conferring them. And at a rate closer to the rate of the Sagamore's earlier days, I still want that. I want that to be a very special award, too. And we're giving them out at maybe two digits a year as opposed to four digits a year, because we want it to be very special. But when I learned about the existence of the Sachem and the bylaws and even some funds that had been collected way back then, it got me thinking that we might want something even more special and even more significant.
But the Sagamore will no longer be the state's highest honor.
That would be correct. No, we reconfigured it, and with Governor Whitcomb's blessing, by the way. We've been pretty busy, so I took some time thinking about whether to revive the honor, and if so, in what form.
Are you still calling it a confederacy?
Well, no. I
was going to ask you that.
No. It's just that.
Mm-hmm. Put out a report, and it was pretty scathing. It actually directly mentioned you and said that you paid lip service to any early education efforts in Indiana, because we remain one of the only states not to directly fund any of those efforts. Can you respond to that?
I haven't seen it, but I certainly associate with their goals. We do need to do much more. A broke state can't do it. Our next step, and I intend the leading initiative of the next session to be all day or full day kindergarten, and that's something I think there's a will to do in the state, but there hasn't been a way. We've been too broke, but because of the fiscal policies of this administration, we're going to have the money to do that, and we're going to get that done, and we may be able to move beyond it. But I think it's a little unfair 1 year in. First we had to fix the problem of bankruptcy, and as soon as we have done that, paid the schools back money they were owed. Immediately, I want to move to new investments in education and at the early stages, specifically.
Do you want to see the issue of moving ISTEP to the spring revived still this session, or are you okay for this session with the bill we're talking about, the compromise that we studied?
I still think it's a good idea. It makes common sense. So do the overwhelming majority of educators and teachers that I bump into as recently as last night at Inglefield House. Heard from many teachers about it, but if it doesn't happen, it's I think one day it will.
Governor, major moves. Time to settle everybody's concerns, find what they call common ground, or is there going to need to be a special session?
Oh, I think we have plenty of time to resolve the concerns, and we'll spend all the time that it takes to do that. You know, I think the legislature has plenty of time to do its job without the extra effort or taxpayer expense of a special session.
But would you call them into a special session if they don't complete the work on this?
I'm just confident that we'll get to an outcome.
During the 04 campaign, you talked about changing the northern end of the I-69 route. Now that's a big discussion in the major news debate. Some say that would be a 2 to 6 year delay.
Yeah.
Is that too much of a delay, seeing we're not going to break ground?
Yeah, 6 years, for example, is too much of a delay. This road's 20 years overdue now. But my position is exactly the same as it's always been, very open to the changes, as long as they don't add to the cost or to the timeline. And I think some of the laws and rules under which these projects get built are ridiculous, frankly, in terms of the process and the paperwork and the repeated litigation that they open up. But nobody in Indiana made those rules. And we'd have to find a way to navigate through them, but I'm more than willing to try with the very important proviso that it's time to get going, get this road built.
Does that mean that moving it out of Perry Township is or is not acceptable?
It'd be perfectly acceptable to me with the proviso that we can't be adding 3, 5, 6 years or a huge uncertainty to the project. So we'll have more than happy to have a go at it, and I've always said that.
You've got 10 days to figure that out. I mean, it sounds like you say it's okay as long as this. You've got 10 days to decide to have.
Now, the legislation could easily say that this is our preference or this is an option that must be explored. But we will need to have the ability to build this road after far too long. And but I'm more than happy to have a look at that. I'm more than happy to have a look at options that minimize, perhaps to zero, passenger car tolls on parts of the road.
Does that mean Senator Miller's language has to come out with the absolute ban of it running?
Yes, it'd have to be refined.
One of the things that your Democratic counterparts have said is that the governor chastised a former governor for doing this without a state place like the prisons, but then you lease a toll road to a foreign company, and that's really inconsistent. What's your reaction?
Well, first of all, they're hopelessly confused. You know, our job is to spend state procurement dollars and tax dollars in state wherever possible. They didn't even keep score. We do. And we are raising the percentage dramatically, and we have brought a lot of contracts back home, such as the Indian software contract and the DNR reservations contract and many others. And we're working very hard on this and making a difference. And should there be a contract to run that toll road, the workers will be Hoosiers. The services and the goods will be purchased from Hoosiers. And that's what we're after. I've said all along that where the mailbox is secondary. It's where the W-2s are. Where are the who's being hired, who's paychecks do the dollars wind up in?
You just said that PV's
and incidentally, we would have $4 billion additional dollars paid to Hoosiers if we do this transaction as we build all the roads that will otherwise not happen.
You just said that PV's administration didn't even keep score on that, but they did have percentages. I mean, that's what they used to attack the policy in the first place.
They turned out to be a shambles. You know, we took us several months to get to an apples and apples situation. I never said they didn't care about it. I just said they hadn't paid enough attention to it. And I know they wanted, when someone asked the question, I'm sure they, of course, would prefer to see state tax dollars stay here. But you have to manage these things. You have to work hard on these things. You have to have a conscious policy in place. And there wasn't one before. There wasn't one in Republican administrations either, for all I know. But now there is, and we work on it every day.
Are you going to meet personally with the conferees on 10/08 to outline what you can compromise on and what you can't?
Sure.
And when is that? Is it scheduled yet? Or?
Oh, I'm sure it'll happen. I'm sure it'll be multiple meetings, and we've been meeting anyway. And Becky talks to them all the time, and we'll spend even more concentrated time now.
What do you think of the incentives in the Senate bill? The $30 million for each county, the $20 million for each county.
I'm very open to. Different ways in which the incredible bounty of this bill for the 7 toll road counties gets divided up. You know, the reason we're having this discussion is this is such an incredible bonanza for those 7 counties that there's all sorts of ways to spread it around. I do strongly prefer, and will tell the conferees this, my initial proposal to fund the Northwest RDA. We created it for a reason. People have been waiting for that for 30 years, and I said I'd look for a way to provide sustained, predictable funding, and this is it. And so that's one I really want to see in the final bill, 10 years of 10. But in terms of all the rest, there's a lot of ways to apportion that money. That's a good thing. Usually, of course, we're dealing with the opposite problem of scarcity. And they're not enough to go around. In this case, there's so much we can build every project on the state's books in those counties. We can distribute money county by county in a variety of ways, as we propose, fund the RDAs, protect passenger motorists against any increase in their tolls, and still have money left over. So there's a bargain in there somewhere.
Senator Meek says that under the plan as they approved it, there's actually not enough money left to do every plan on every road on the 10-year plan. Everybody can start on how much money
yeah.
it is.
Well, let me just refine that. There certainly is in the toll road counties with room to spare, because 20% of Indiana gets 34% of the money under most of these versions, not to mention the value of things like US 31, which isn't counted in the 34%. Well, we're working with the figures we inherited and the 10-year plan we inherited. I wouldn't be surprised if some of those things wind up costing more money. All the more reason to make this step. All that's saying is that the gap might be bigger than the one that we were told we had of about $3 billion. But let's just see.
Governor, can you explain your personal thoughts on getting your signature as quickly as possible in Senate Bill 5?
The funeral bill?
Yeah.
It's good legislation, necessary legislation, and we have a brave young man to lay to rest Monday. I wanted it to be the law of the state in time for that event.
Do you anticipate a court challenge to that?
I don't know. I don't care. I think it'll stand up. Knowing that I wanted to move very quickly on this bill, I conferred with 3 different constitutional lawyers ahead of time to make sure that it was within the boundaries of First Amendment law. I believe it is. I think it'll stand up if someone should choose, for whatever reason, to contest it.
Governor, I want to go back to the question about enough money, whether there's enough money to fund all the projects.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the way you've sold it. I think you've sold it to the public as going to all these different places.
Let me just explain it to you again.
We
received it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. In fact, it would make it more mandatory, because then the hole would be even deeper, and the lost jobs and the lost opportunity would be even bigger. So the bigger you believe the gap is, if Bob has a crystal ball that's better than all the estimators that worked in the last administration and left us these estimates, he might be right, in which case it makes it more urgent that we do whatever we can to close that gap.
I don't think it's his crystal ball. I think it's his trust fund. Creating a trust fund takes money away that would have been spent on the 10-year plan.
Oh, I see. You mean the suggestion of carving money out and holding it out for years? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that's what you were asking. Well, I personally think that it's very important to get this money back in the ground as fast as possible. A common error that I hear some people loosely say is, oh, in 10 years the money will be gone. No, it won't. You'll be driving on it. Your children will be working in businesses located next to it because of it. And so I also think it's the best answer to the cookie jar question, which is the best question people, citizens, ask me. Okay, I love your plan, but how do you keep the future politicians from siphoning money off to some other purpose? Good question. Best answer I've got is we need to get it reinvested in permanent public assets as fast as possible. So I appreciate where Bob is coming from with the idea of carving out perhaps $500 million. But I think we better be careful about that because the goal here is to close the gap, do it fast, and create the jobs that the state needs. Excuse me for not catching the meaning.
Oh, just real quick, what's your thoughts about Lucas Oil Stadium?
The more I think about it, the more I like it. And I got to tell you, I like Mr. Lucas. I called him the day of the announcement just to say, congratulations, hope it works out well for you. Had a great talk, and then I by chance met him and his whole family that evening and had another long talk. I proposed to him, by the way, that state ought to take a look at his products. Many of them, at least, are made down around Corydon. And so we had that conversation in the first meeting set up for next week with our procurement people. So who knows, but... You got to like the guy, I will tell you that. And I love the success story of a Hoosier. That's exactly what we're always trying to encourage. Hoosiers who to be risk takers and inventors in the best tradition of our state. And from anything I can see, we've got one here and we got to be proud of it.
He said he would strongly consider moving his headquarters here.
Yeah, well, I said that was my idea. I brought it up to him that to have some kind of marketing person contact. Yeah, it's already happened. I say the first meeting's next week, we'll have a look. There may be some use, and from everything I understand about his products, they perform very, very well, and they are worth any premium that they charge for them.
One concern, I've done a number of Man on the Street interviews in regards to Lucas Oil Stadium, and I've heard from a number of people, more than like three or four actually, that they kind of feel like they've lost some ownership of the new stadium because of we're seeing Lucas Oil potentially broadcast on the ceiling and all the cup holders, and the name is there. Certainly they're at least have plenty of ties to Indiana, but is there any way we can get, say, more public sort of ownership of that stadium, more of a feeling that, it's not a corporate stadium, it's a corporate hand of a stadium?
Well, I think that the best measure of ownership is the hundreds and thousands of people, convention goers and spectators who will be using and taking advantage of that facility. 90%, as I recall, of the events in the stadium part will not be the Colts. There'll be all sorts of other things. And then, of course, the convention center is an important economic step forward for central Indiana. So I hope that the place will be one that people enjoy and feel pride and ownership in, regardless whose name's on the outside. And Mr. Lucas's dollars will help pay the bills.
Governor, there's been an ongoing dispute on these facilities, these canned hunting facilities.
Yeah.
Your administration has got involved in that. The only bill that's remaining alive would require the DNR to compensate them for loss of income. month mm-hmm. they close. Is that something due to the fiscal impact that you would consider vetoing?
Oh, I think this thing needs a compromise. I thought one was close, and maybe it can come back. But no, I wouldn't rule that out if it was reasonable, some sort of phase out. There's a lot of ambiguity in the past. I've tried to read back through the record, and there is a case that these folks were told by the DNR in years past that whatever the law seems to say, what you're doing is okay, and they've put out a lot of money. So that their argument has, I think, some merit, and from a fairness standpoint. So I think there may well be a compromise in there, and I hope we reach one.
If you don't reach it in the legislature, is it something that you'll be able to handle administratively?
Maybe. I think we'd look for a way to do that.
The Speaker is saying he doesn't think there's time to get an income tax to lower property tax. Do you think that idea is now dead for the session?
I hope not. No, I don't think it's dead, and I hope not. Obviously, it was one that I proposed. I do believe that more flexibility for local government to raise money in other ways. I've proposed this 2 years in a row. Should be a part of, an important part of, permanent property tax relief in the state. If you're going to lean less on the property tax, you have to have something else to lean on. And that idea is still alive, and it still could survive and appear in a conference report that gets passed this year. I'm for it.
What about some of the other things that you pushed for this session and going into conference committee? Is they're dead? I mean, they could be. What would you like to see revised yet? ISTEP, school dereg, the getting rid of assessors, cigarette tax, any of those? What do you see being resurrected?
Well, school dereg is very much alive, and I think it's very important. I've hardly been to a school district in this state where educators, superintendents, principals, and teachers didn't say, my gosh, if we could spend less time on this paperwork, less time with these mandates and money, we could do a better job of teaching kids. And this is a great chance to make a big step forward. It's a completely optional course. No school district has to do it. But for those who want to free themselves from being told how to teach, how to educate kids, to simply go for results and be measured on the basis of their performance, that'd be a great reform, and I think one that'd be very well, much welcomed. It's obviously been endorsed by the school boards and the superintendents, and so it's alive, and that's one I really have been putting some time in as recently as yesterday and will continue to. But you don't get everything you go for, especially when you go for a lot of change, and we tend to do that. Thanks.
Thank you.
You know, I know you read all that stuff, but